This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
We're also always looking for volunteers. If you didn't know, everyone on the air here at KBOO is a volunteer. To find out how to get involved, you can go to the KBOO website, kboo.org/volunteer. There's a lot of different ways that you can get involved, but if you'd like to help create the Out Loud radio show, we welcome your participation. No previous experience is necessary, though you do need to play nice with others. That's just the KBOO way. So again, our email, if you've got any questions about the show, about getting involved, or have any feedback for us, again, our email is outloudradio@gmail.com. We're going to take a short music break, hear from Joan Jett, and we'll be back in just a few moments to hear from Joe and what Joe's been doing with Basic Rights Oregon, as well as Butch Voices. Just a moment. We'll be talking about that. This song from Joan Jett is titled Androgynous. Welcome back to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO. So that song was from the Dolly Roots called Because I'm Awesome. We'll be hearing that Joan Jett song later in the show. I need to share a community announcement with you before we go on to our interview this evening. Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 and in Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or at radiocab.net. Another community announcement organized by some teenagers. I have been asked to let you know that the Oregon Queer Youth Summit is taking place this Saturday, May 11th at Jefferson High School. The Oregon Queer Youth Summit is a free day-long conference presented by and for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, and questioning youth and their allies. The theme for this year is Dream It, Speak It, Do It, and the summit includes workshops, as well as food and all sorts of networking opportunities. So the conference welcomes LGBTQI youth and their allies between the ages of 12 and 24, as well as their adult allies, such as Gay Straight Alliance advisors and school counselors, to attend this conference. So again, that's the Oregon Queer Youth Summit happening this Saturday, May 11th at Jefferson High School. Your favorite search engine will help you find more details on the internet. Now, next, I'd like to move into our discussion, and I'd like to welcome Joe to the show. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Carla.
So you are an activist who wears many hats. First of all, let's let our listeners know about your work with Basic Rights Oregon.
Sure thing. I'm the development coordinator at Basic Rights Oregon. For folks who don't know, Basic Rights Oregon is a statewide LGBT advocacy organization, and we work in three areas. One, our Racial Justice and Alliance Building Program, our Trans Justice Program, and our Marriage Equality Program. And me, I kind of do community events for all three programs for the organization.
Right on. And the website is?
BasicRights.org.
Wonderful. Because I know you've got all sorts of things going on. Unfortunately, we won't be able to talk about all the different awesomeness that's going on with Basic Rights, but I encourage folks to check out the website for a lot more information. And so you guys have some exciting stuff coming up.
Yeah, this Friday night we have a dance party fundraiser. It's called Benefits with Friends. Yes, we love the catchy names for our events. And it's a dance party for trans people and our allies. And it's Friday night starting at 9:30 to 1 a.m. at Crush at 1400 Southeast Morrison, where we have Monica Megahertz, who was featured by PQ Monthly recently, as also a part of the Trans 100. She's an amazing DJ, along with a performance by a new queer punk pop band, Microaggression. So no one's turned away for a lack of funds, but it's a $5 to $8 sliding scale, 21 and over crowd, and all the proceeds go to benefit Basic Rights Oregon's Trans Justice Program, where we're working to end healthcare discriminations that trans folks face every day with exclusions put into insurance plans.
Right. That's such important work. And again, a shout out. I know there's a whole team of people at Basic Rights who are working on appropriate access to health care, not just for trans people, but for all people. And again, I encourage folks to check out the BasicRights.org website. And if you can, come out to the event on Friday. But certainly if you want to engage and get involved, check out the website for more opportunities.
Definitely. And if you want more information on this particular event, you can also email David at BasicRights.org. For the night, we're going to have a photo booth. We have raffle prizes from Ritual Arts Tattoo and Body Piercing, Shebop, Sacred Vessel Natural Medicine, and even a portrait by one of our Trans Justice Working Group members, Lisa Summers, who is an amazing artist extraordinaire.
Wonderful. That's great. And so, again, I know you're really busy with Basic Rights work, but another hat that you wear is you're very involved with the Butch Voices community.
Yes.
So tell us about your work with them.
Well, Butch Voices is kind of my baby. I formed it in 2008, and we've been going strong since. It's a national organization that's by and for butches, studs, aggressives, masculine of center folks, where we work on enhancing and sustaining the well-being of all women, female-bodied and trans-identified individuals who are masculine of center. So we provide programs that build community, positive visibility, and empower ourselves to advocate inclusive of and beyond our gender and sexual orientation. The organization started in 2008. We're on our third national conference coming up in August. We've held regional conferences in Portland back in 2010, New York, LA, and Dallas. In our time off since our last national conference in Oakland, August 2011, we've put on some smaller events called Community Conversations. We've done them so far in San Francisco and Seattle and Boston, Dallas just this past weekend, as well as Portland, which is coming up this Saturday. We're doing that in conjunction with the Queer Club at Portland Community College, the Cascade campus, and it's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And basically, the Community Conversation is the only event to where we're specific about who usually attends, and it's folks along the Butch and Maskenov Center spectrum, where we get to talk with each other about issues that we face, and we kind of hold space for each other, and we're able to connect over maybe areas that we normally would not bond over usually. So these smaller community conversations are building up towards the national conference that's happening in August.
That's exciting. So again, just to make sure folks know, the Butch Voices community conversation happening here in Portland this Saturday, May 11th, 10 a.m. At the Portland Community College campus, the Cascade campus. And again, just to be clear, the Butch Voices conference welcomes everyone. But
yes.
Again, this weekend, the invitation specifically for, I guess, put the boundaries on it again?
Yeah, it's for Butch's Maskenov Center folks. I mean, if you have a question whether or not you identify, it's really up to you. We're not about to police anyone's gender who's going to attend, but it is specific to those folks.
Okay.
Our national conference is open to anyone who wants to attend. We're also doing another community conversation in Toronto on May 25th, which will be exciting, and then leading up to the national conference, which is August 15th through 18th in Oakland, which will be 4 days of workshops, performances, networking, film nights, and we usually expect between 300 and 400 folks that travel from all across the U.S. and Canada. And we've even got our open call for proposals right now for workshops and performers, film and artwork, and that deadline goes to June 1st. And there's lots of information on the Butch Voices website, which is butchvoices.com. And we're also super excited about our keynote speakers. We have Cherie Moraga, who is a well-known playwright, poet, and author. And my first experience coming across her was through the book This Bridge Called My Back, which was a really amazing feminist women of color anthology that I've been trying to get Cherie as a keynote speaker since we started doing Butch Voices. And so it's kind of a feather in my hat that I'm so glad that we can bring her to this audience. She's in her 60s, and she's just a Butch feminist, women of color writer, and just she's going to bring it, I know, pretty fierce. As well as Jay Toole, who is a 65-year-old Butch lesbian and the co-founder and shelter director for Queers for Economic Justice. And Jay's going to definitely tell us lots of tales over her lifetime, dealing with being homeless, dealing with the mafia, being in prison. It's just lots of life experience for our audience to gain from.
And those speakers, again, you're aiming, that's going to be August of this year down in Oakland, the National Butch Voices Conference. How exciting.
Yes. Where we have early bird registration going right now for $100 that covers all 4 days, and that expires on June 3rd. And we have it to where folks can volunteer. As long as you can put in 4 hours of volunteer time, you can attend that day's events, the nighttime events, the daytime workshops, whichever. So basically, you can volunteer each of the days and be able to go to the conference at no cost. We do have financial aid, and we also have scholarships available and student pricing. The conference has always built every event that we've had, even though we have suggested fees involved. We don't turn anyone away for a lack of funds because we do not want money to be a reason that folks are not able to access these resources and to community that you may not have in the city where you live. So you can definitely find us online at the Butch Voices website, butchvoices.com, and you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter for all the up-to-date info.
That's so exciting. I know you've been working really hard, and a lot of sweat equity is going into this. I'm sure there's a team of people involved, but I know, Joe, you've been so instrumental in making this all happen. So
I'm very fortunate to have a strong board as well as a steering committee, and each time we have folks taking on different leadership roles, and that's really been the benefit of people really feeling moved by this work and wanting to get involved, or people really not unsure of the skills that they have to add to the team. And so it's definitely about finding mentors and role models all throughout this. And when we do community conversations, we have people that just put on events. Like I just came back from Dallas this past weekend, where we hadn't really had a whole lot of interest prior, but we had a great community outpouring that, you know, they connected with people who they didn't know in their own city, and now they're going to do this whole culture hop with each other, which is just going to be amazing. And we had a weekend of events called Butch Fest.
Right on.
So it was a lot of fun.
All these butches. How exciting. Yes. So I just want to let our listeners know, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Out Loud. My name is Carla. I'm speaking with Joe, who I'd like to say you're the creative mastermind behind Butch Voices way back 2008. So thank you for all your work on this event. Again, the website, butchvoices.com. And just to remind, I mean, you've shared so much great information. This radio show will be on the KBOO website within the hour that we say goodbye, kboo.fm/outloud. You can find the audio there. I also just want to remind listeners, you mentioned briefly about call for submissions. So again, for the Butch Voices conference, again, happening in Oakland in August, but go to the butchvoices.com website for those different call for submissions. How exciting. It'll be great to see what the community puts together. And I definitely want to have you come back closer to the event to share some more details about that Butch Voices conference. Now, unfortunately, we need to wrap up our conversation, but I want to give you a chance to leave our listeners with any closing thoughts or any other announcements that you wanted to share.
Sure. I mean, we want folks to come down and join us on Saturday for the community conversation here in Portland. That's from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Portland Community College, the Cascade campus in North Portland on Killingsworth. And that's, again, from 10 to 3 p.m. And we're co-sponsored with the Queer Club at Portland Community College. We're really grateful to work with student groups, especially like to get on, you know, student campuses, because that is definitely one piece that we tend to bring together as an intergenerational dialogue. So I'm looking forward to this weekend's conversation and looking forward to what ideas come from that will feed into the conference come this August.
Right on. Okay, keep up the good work. Again, thank you, Joe, for joining us tonight. You can find Joe at basicrights.org or also via butchvoices.com. So thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you again soon. Now, listeners, stay tuned. We're going to be back in just a few moments to speak with Natalie, and we're going to take a music break and hear, this time we will hear from Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. I'd encourage you to turn this up. The song is called Androgynous.
He calls Dick. He's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane. You know she's sporting a chain. Same hair revolution. Same build evolution. They love each other so.
Welcome back to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show here on KBOO. My name is Carla, and we just said goodbye to Joe from Basic Rights Oregon. Joe's also very involved with Butch Voices, so thanks to Joe for being our guest. Now we're going to transition into a more serious conversation, and we are going to be opening up the phone lines and welcoming your calls. So the phone number here at the KBOO studio, if you'd like to add your story or an idea with us, the phone number here is 503-231-8187. I'd like to welcome Natalie to the show, or perhaps welcome back, Natalie.
Hi.
Hello. For folks that aren't familiar with Natalie, she is a regular contributor, a producer, and a host of Out Loud radio show, so her voice will hopefully be familiar to many of you. Tonight's topic came very close to home for myself because of an experience that Natalie had recently, and I'm going to ask Natalie to tell her story in just a moment, but I also want to welcome another guest to the studio, an individual who's not been on the show before, but is very much involved with the topic that we're going to be discussing. And Emmanuel, I'd like to welcome you to Out Loud.
Thank you for having me.
And Emmanuel is going to be talking about the nonprofit that he founded and works for. It's called Second Chances Are for Everyone. And so, Emmanuel, I'm going to let you let our listeners know about that in just a moment. But okay. I'd like to start with Natalie sharing her story based on a recent experience. And so, Natalie, let our folks know, you know, what happened with you in the Q Center.
Okay, so recently there were some developments, and I've done a couple of interviews and talked about this before. I did an interview with PQ Monthly, speaking about it briefly. Essentially, what it is this: I was incarcerated for a number of years, and when I got out, I transitioned back into the community, and that being Portland. And part of my transitioning and getting familiar with who I was and how I identified as a person was becoming more connected with the LGBTQ community. And one way that I did that was through the Q Center. I found a way through the Q Center to help and volunteer and also give back to the community. So I worked with Q Center for a number of months, last year and a half, I would say. I was there doing a number of roles, started with just volunteering, greeting people when they came in, going through orientation and training for that, working at the reception desk to make sure that the center could be open and available, and just helping to provide that safe space and doing some community building there. I also facilitated a MTF support group, peer support group there, for other transgender women who were in need of support and resources. I did that for several months and then decided at one point that I wanted to become more involved and become more of a take on a leadership role in the community to help give back and to make opportunities for others to get involved. So I started doing volunteer orientations and trainings as a coordinator, one of the volunteer coordinators at Q Center, and worked a lot with that, bringing new people into the center. Orientating them, giving them tours, and then setting them up for training to work at the desk and just fill a variety of roles and then kind of oversee and direct their volunteer experience and make sure that, you know, they felt a part of the community and were engaged, and to just kind of help people stay involved. And so I did that for a number of months and did a lot of work with things that are involved with that, as far as like facilitating different programs and making sure that volunteers are there to help with those programs or events that are going on, working on the manual, which is kind of an official document for people that are volunteering, and just kind of building on that experience for others. Also, I helped develop the business plan for the Market Q, which is opening there now and is actually up and running. And what that is it's a market that serves as a like a job skills and training model for youth and young adults, particularly the youth and young adults of SMRC, so that they can get some of those skills that they might need as they're coming into adulthood and moving into the the real world, as you would say, and finding jobs and trying to build those skills that might be necessary to find those. And so developed a plan for how to implement that and what that would look like and get it up and running. Also contacted various local suppliers, artisans, and people to feature their work to get them involved in the community process of doing that. So several things, a variety of tasks that I took on at Q Center because I was passionate about the work, and it was beneficial to me as well to be involved in that and that kind of community involvement. It's really helped in like my transitioning back into society to be directly involved with things. So it was going good for a long time, for about a year and a half. I worked on things like that. So.
And I just want to acknowledge Natalie was such an awesome Q Center volunteer. She was given the Volunteer of the Year Award for last year, for 2012. And so just to acknowledge that the Q Center acknowledged your awesomeness, I cannot imagine the number of hours that you gave to the Q Center. I'm just going to say hundreds.
Yeah, somewhere in the hundreds, I'm sure. There's a way to track that, and unfortunately, I was never very good at tracking. The hours didn't matter because I was, like I said, I was there because I cared about it. It was passionate, and yeah, Q Center did. They recognized me just this last year at their annual Winter Gala fundraising event and presented me with an award in front of all the fundraisers and all the activities that were going on there, and it was very, very nice and fulfilling, you know, to be acknowledged in that regard.
Okay, so. and then the tides turned.
Right. So then, back in I think it was September or October, maybe we were at a staff meeting. We were talking about goals and plans for the next years and projections for things that we're going to be working on, and I was a part of that and building on the different programs that we were working on there. And one of the things that came up was because we're working with SMRC, because SMRC is now a part of Q Center, and because a lot of the programs that the services that we provide work with elders, people in the aging community, and other various vulnerable communities.
And I just want to make sure everyone knows that SMRC is the Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center that
yes.
recently or last year came under the Q Center umbrella. So just
right.
when we talk about SMRC, that's specifically the youth programming side of the Q Center.
Right. Essentially, that's what it is. It's the youth program aspect of Q Center. And so because they're a part of Q Center and because of the different, communities that we serve at Q Center, part of the state requirements, or what the state requires of organizations that provide services to those groups, is that staff submit to background checks. And so this was brought up at that time to my attention, and was something that I kind of had a little bit of concern about because I have a background, and but I was very open with it at the time, and always have been open about it with staff at Q Center. And so I just wanted to. At that time, it was something that came up, like, oh, maybe I should look at this because it's going to definitely affect my involvement there. Of course, there's a lot of other things that go on with how I feel about background checks and how I feel about my background and I feel about how those things are applied and other things that go along with the politics of it and the way that we treat people that are ex-offenders or coming out of prison, but regardless and nevertheless, I opted to go ahead and submit to the background check early at Q Center. And so I went through the process as soon as I could. I got all the information together that I needed to submit, fingerprints. And the background check is done through the Department of Human Services for the state of Oregon. There's a background check unit. And I put together, you know, a packet with information about my volunteer experience, information about different milestones and markers and successes that I'd had since being released, work that I'd done while incarcerated to help better myself and to improve myself, and also tried to directly relate the volunteer experience and how it enabled and helped me to be in a position that I could be successful in recovery. And so I submitted that to the state of Oregon and came back, the result of that came back within a couple of weeks that I was denied. And there was no particular reason that they had denied me. There was a list of prior charges that they said qualified me for a denial. They didn't specifically say which ones. It was just a list of things that were, to be honest, all drug-related property offenses, stuff that was all related to a history and a struggle with drug addiction that I'd had for several years. So, yeah, that was the result. And at that time, I was told that I would no longer be able to volunteer or work at Q Center in any capacity. So
that must have been crushing.
It was devastating because of the amount of time and the effort and the energy that I'd put in over the last, you know, year and a half at Q Center, a place that I'm passionate about, you know, a place that's had that's gone through a lot of changes, that's had a lot of involvement in the community and even a lot of conflict within the community, people that don't necessarily agree with the way that they approach certain topics or ideas. And working with them, I know, you know, what the work is and what they're trying to accomplish, and I'm passionate about that, and I believe in it, and I've, you know, stood up for that and supported it. So to at that point to be told, well, you can no longer do this anymore, it was crushing. It was devastating, you know, and it made me rethink a lot of the efforts that I'd put in and where I was with that and how it was going to affect me, you know, in the future. So
I'm so sorry that you had to go through that experience. It sounds, I mean, I can't imagine how unpleasant it's been for you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. You know, it's definitely, like I said, it's difficult. But because it's something that I'm so passionate about, it's something that I want to bring a little bit of attention to, you know.
So, yeah. So thank you for being our guest, and thank you for telling your story, because yeah. I think it is us sharing, I mean, an individual sharing our stories is what helps create change.
Right.
Or to get people start thinking about action towards what can we change.
Right.
But before we talk about, and I do want to hear from you around what people can do to support you or to support changes with these background checks. Bring us up to date. Are you able to even go to Q Center? Are you volunteering at all? I mean, is that door, that window of opportunity, is that completely closed?
Well, what it looks like now as far as volunteering and working with Q Center in any capacity, that's on suspension right now. It's kind of like on a hiatus, okay? So it's on a break pending an appeal.
Okay.
I have 45 days from the decision that they gave me to appeal it and request a hearing, which I'm going to do. I'm going to follow through with it just on principle because I don't think that – I think the way that they denied me was categorical. It was based on a set of questions that they are predetermined to answer to. They have to answer a certain way based on what was input, without regard to the qualitative data, you know, that I submitted or the context of the situation and what had happened. And so I think, and I believe that by requesting this hearing and this appeal, that will give me the opportunity to bring that information, you know, to the forefront and say, look, this is why it's not a good decision what you made. Mm-hmm. You know, what the way that I imagine that it functions is the state of Oregon is given a set of rules, laws that say if such and such is the case, then such and such is your answer. They don't have room to kind of, you know, to decide with regard to special circumstances what's going on or the people involved or what has happened since. The federal government or the FBI or whoever it is hands down these set of guidelines and says if this is what happens, then this is what your answer is. And I that's really what I would like to challenge here. I don't believe that is a process that is beneficial to anyone, you know, in the community, anyone who's trying to transition out of prison, you know. In all different kinds of aspects, you know, I understand exactly what's going on with Q Center and that they're kind of stuck in the middle with this. And I'm not upset with Q Center about this at all because I don't think they're responsible. It's the state of Oregon, it's the processes, and it's the way that we look at people who have made mistakes, you know, and are getting out of bad situations and trying to get into better situations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at right now, appealing the process. I've got a lot of letters of support from people in the community, you know, just attesting to my involvement, the work that I've done, the various organizations, you know, that I work with, and then just, you know, how beneficial it's been for them and for me to be a part of this and why, you know, I need mm-hmm. to continue to be a part of this work. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, so that's where it's at.
Okay, well, I'll be sending you some good vibes, and I'm going to say that I look forward to seeing your smiling face behind the counter, which is the kind of the greeting area, or behind the counter at the market that's at the Q Center. So I'm just going to look forward to you volunteering and being an awesome asset again someday. Hopefully we can help make that happen. And we want to come back and hear more about how folks can support you. And again, you've certainly been an incredible asset at KABU. And thankfully, KABU does not require background checks. Again, no judgment about Q Center, though. We all adore the Q Center, and they've got to follow the rules of their funding sources as well. But
right. And really quick, just to say something about that. For people that are supportive of me and the plight that, you know, that I'm going through and what I'm challenging through the state, Q Center is doing what they can to support me. I'll say that within the confines of the law, what they can legally do to support me. They've definitely expressed sympathy and dismay over this decision, and I appreciate it, you know. And hopefully with their help and with help in the community, that I will be able to overcome this. As I've said before, Q Center has had various discussions with people in the community about approaches and conflict over the way that they approach certain things. And I understand that. And I understand about holding organizations and individuals accountable for their actions and things that they may have said or done. With regards to supporting me, the problem comes in where if people want to attack Q Center over what's happened with me, that doesn't help me, because Q Center, who is supporting me and wants me to work there, By disqualifying their voice or making them an entity that is not qualified to advocate for people, then it kind of eliminates you know, my support there. So just saying that, I understand, again, people have their various opinions and what they want to do. But to support me would look more like supporting this topic for discussion, this challenging this process that we go through. So and we could talk more about that later.
Thank you for clarifying that. And to go one more step, let me just ask, is there a potential, again, if this background check gets cleared up, that you can actually go back and work and volunteer with the Q Center in the future? That's something you're interested in, right?
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm challenging. Is that if I get past this, then I'll go back to Q Center and I'll keep helping them and I'll keep developing these programs and I'll keep trying to get people involved and bringing people in and working on diversifying the place and engaging other queer people of color and getting them involved in the center, which is something that I'm passionate about. And I don't know that people see that all the time, but I'm there. I live in that community. You know, the Q Center is where I live and is where I work. And I'm, as much as I can, I'm going to stay there and keep making it, you know, known that I'm there. And there's others of us there.
And just in case there's any, like, black and white, really technical thinkers, technically Natalie lives in the neighborhood, not in the building.
A
resident of the Mississippi neighborhood,
right.
Just to clarify that.
Right. Same zip code.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Natalie. And we're going to come back in just a moment and start focusing on some solutions or ways that people can take action if they're interested in this issue around background checks. I want to transition over to our other guest, Emmanuel. And let's hear from you. And about, I know you've been very busy with your nonprofit. Again, the organization is titled Second Chances Are for Everyone. And let our listeners know you've been busy and what's going on with this nonprofit.
So thank you for having me, first of all. Pleasure to be here in such great company. So Second Chances Are for Everyone, it's an acronym, which is SCAFE. Which means second chances are for everyone. And our whole mission is to provide community support services to men transitioning into society after they've been incarcerated. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. You know, we're another reentry center, but I've added some different components to SCAFE that I felt could benefit the men and people that are going through the program. I've been doing the work since about 2008, doing a lot of research and data, traveling from Oregon to Atlanta, as far as Virginia, to collect the data and, you know, get a different idea of what people's barriers are concerning having a background, where they're employing or applying for housing or employment, and then brought it all back home to Portland, brought it back to my native hometown where I was actually incarcerated myself, which is why I started SCAFE. And so far, the reception, people have been very receptive to it. The community has been very supportive. I'm doing a small clothing drive now at my gym, and that's one of the components of SCAFE is to collect business attire to give to men so they could look professional, feel good, and actually go out and reduce the barrier of how they look and focus on getting the job and sitting up straight and just empowering them in whatever way I can. There are several components.
I want to make sure folks know about your website, because in case there's something we don't mention, again, you've got a lot of different stuff going on.
Yes.
But your website has got, you know, resources, ways to contact you. Mm-hmm. So let our listeners know how to find you online.
All right. It is www.scafe.org. Once again, it's www.scafe.org, like cafe, but put an S in front of it, scafe.org.
And again, that second chances are for everyone.
Yes.
And even though I just want to acknowledge you've been talking about men and doing a clothing drive, you know, looking for professional attire for men to go on job interviews and help gain employment after they've been incarcerated. You know, a conversation we had before the show tonight was around women or transgender individuals and just acknowledging out loud, this is a queer culture kind of show. But just to, even though you're saying the word men, I just wanted to let our listeners know anyone,
definitely
everyone,
anyone, everyone, second chances are for everyone. If we do not have the resource or the answer, we definitely will resource you out to where you can get the help and service that you need. But it's, you know, second chances are for everyone. It's created out of my own frustrations. So I can't say second chances are for everyone. We don't service everyone. So in addition, we're resource center / reentry center.
Right on. Okay. And that's where, let us know about this clothing drive in case anybody's listening. You want, again, professional pants, shirts,
slacks,
ties,
skirts, leggings, whatever.
Anything.
Guys, anything professional attire that is gently worn or you may not wear anymore. I have a donation site set up at Lloyd Athletic Club. It's at 815 Northeast Halsey, and there they have a barrel with the logo to, you know, donate all the clothes and whatnot. So yeah, we're accepting professional business attire, men and women's attire, and we basically take that and clean it up and give it to the men and women who need it, so they could kind of put that best foot forward, and we give them a second chance to make a first impression, so to speak.
Shoes, socks,
ties,
earrings,
cufflinks, bracelets, cufflinks, whatever you have that you're not using that you would like to donate, we would greatly appreciate it, because it's definitely going to go to somebody who could use it most likely immediately. Mm-hmm. So the sooner the better. We have a receipt for you if you need a tax write-off. I can get that going for you. And we're just, so far, we're just really surprised at how supportive the community has been. Not that I don't think the community would be supportive, but it's refreshing to know that people are actually like, yeah, we support you, we have your back, and kind of helping you reach that goal or whatever it is, whether it's helping somebody, you know, successfully transition off parole, pay fines, give them a suit, give them a job, give them career and a resume writing skills. So it's great that we have the community support, and we need more support. So definitely.
And so besides the clothing drive, what are some other ways perhaps that listeners could offer some support to, again, the nonprofit that Emmanuel runs or created? Again, he's a creative mastermind as well, called Second Chances Are for Everyone. The website, again, scafe.org. Mm-hmm. What other ways can people offer their support?
A few of the ways that people can offer support is definitely money. We definitely need, you know, finances from the community and from myself, because it gets hard paying for everything out of my pocket. I don't mind, but I'm passionate about it. So we definitely need money, moolah, dinero. That's only three ways I know how to say that. We also need like mentors and men and women who would be willing to mentor a young man or a woman and kind of just give them a different avenue and kind of help them clean up on their verbiage and the way they pronounce things and articulate things. We also need, we actually just got community. I just got a community space. So I just got a building space where I can have for free, but our most immediate needs, I would say, would be financial needs. It would be community support, whether it's having a mentor, also having different ideas. And like, for example, I would love to have you come into one of our workshops and talk about your experience and kind of getting the community behind us to have a variety of resources for different people, different men, different women. So that way we're well versed and kind of reaching out in every area that, you know, we see fit or that the community may need. So the more support we have from the community, the better. And it's been outstanding so far. We could always use more. And, you know, there's some reciprocity. I don't take and not give. Like, I give, if you like, you know, and I take as well. But
but paying it forward.
Paying it forward.
I'm going to guess you might need some office furniture or some office stuff for your space.
Well, luckily, this office space that I have, it's fully furnished. There's a desk and a computer. Well, I bring my own computer, but it's fully furnished. But mostly, and I have to do better about asking for finances because I'm
yourself.
Not. Yeah, I just. But if somebody owes me money, you better believe I'm going to get my money.
And how about, let me put a shout out, Emmanuel, as a business owner with a nonprofit. He's so focused on doing good for other people. Any kind of business support for this man would be awesome as well.
It would be awesome. And that's one of our biggest components is me going out and talking to different businesses, local businesses, small businesses, nonprofits, and faith-based organizations to say, would you guys be willing to take a second chance? Would you mentor this man? Would you let this man or woman come in and volunteer his or her time? That way you get free labor, they get accountability and a reference, and if you guys like each other, they get hired, they earn money, we reduce spending that $34,000 that we as taxpayers pay every year, sometimes more than one year, to house one person. So how great would it be to have businesses support and then actually get these men and women involved and get them working and let them reclaim their lives. So businesses are very important. It's very important that I get any type of support. And it's not just something that you're giving us. These men and women are going to earn that and work for that. And most oftentimes they get out and they're ready to go. They don't have time to go back and forth with, you know, and not that they're above conversation, but they want to work. They want to have families to take care of and probationary fees to take care of. They have hygiene needs. And we also got granted free bags. So in these bags I give to the men or women transitioning out, there's condoms, there's sanitizer, I put in a pair of socks, there's a calendar, and just small free things that I could give that were free to SCAFE that I'm giving free to the guys and girls that are coming out, because we can reduce some of those barriers. And you know, if we're helping prevent the spread of HIV, AIDS, and awareness, or Hep C, or STDs, why not? So I figure since it's free to me, I might as well make the service a free and affordable to everyone else. And luckily, it's sometimes in Portland, it's who you know. So I have a lot of support, like from a friend of mine works for Multnomah County, and he donated thousands of condoms and lubricants. So,
and the shout out for the health department, right on.
Woo-woo.
Yes. Right on. Now, again, I just want to let listeners know, if you've just joined the conversation, you're listening to Out Loud. This is the Queer Culture Radio Show here on KBOO. My name is Carla. That was Emmanuel just talking, and his nonprofit is called Second Chances Are for Everyone. Website scafe.org. And the topic of our conversation is life after incarceration. Natalie told her story as well around losing an awesome volunteer position, as well as a paid position with the Q Center due to a background check and her history with that background check. And so, again, SCAFE is just one of the local resources here in the Portland area. I also want to acknowledge another resource that SCAFE is hopefully part of, but when I was doing a little research for the radio show tonight, the 211 social service database, you can go to 211info.org or call 211 on a landline telephone, but they have a whole category of resources for the state of Oregon, you know, just to acknowledge the community outside of the Portland metro area. It's sometimes very difficult to find resources when you're outside of the city, but if you can contact the 211 social service database, they have a whole category of resources around ex-offender support. And again, I'm not a fan of that verbiage, ex-offender, but let's say individuals that are re-entering our communities after incarceration, and there's a whole there is a list of support that's out there. But again, hopefully listeners can find the appropriate resources for themselves. I want to go back to Natalie for a few moments. Again, we're quickly running out of time. But I want to start talking about what can folks do to make a change, you know, based on the stories that we've been hearing. And with Natalie's situation around these background checks, give our listeners some coaching around if this is something that you want to get involved with, what can listeners do to show some support?
Yeah, no, definitely. And really, really quick, just to clarify, like with my work at Q Center, most of it's been volunteer involvement. I've been paid for various projects that I've done there and assisting there. I was not paid full-time on staff, okay. So I wasn't a part of staff,
right.
Which is also the reason why I'm allowed to speak to the public about this. As well, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, getting involved and how do we start changing these things, the first place is to have a conversation about it. And that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to do by making this a public thing, why I'm going through this and what's happening. We need to start having a conversation about how we treat people who are considered ex-offenders. And if we think about the word ex-offender, I don't have so much of a problem with it because it has the X in front of it. That means no longer, okay? They've offended, they've gone in, they've done their time, and they've paid for it. They've, whatever it is, they've paid their debt to society, okay? But they've served something in place of the wrong that they did, okay? And that's what we need to start acknowledging, is that mm-hmm. people have paid their debt, okay? In this country, you know, alone, we have people go to prison and they get put on probation and they get a felony. And the felony stays with them for the rest of their life. And what that felony does is basically puts an X on the back of their shirt, you know, that for wherever they go to apply for services, for housing, for in some states food stamps, for employment, they have to say, look at this giant X on my back. Now you can discriminate against me. Okay, and that's what it serves. The place to start is start having these conversations about how that affects people, and if we expect people to become better people and to make changes when they come out, then we can't expect them to be continually held accountable for the mistakes that they had made in the past. That's where I think the conversation needs to start. I say this all the time because I think she's a great resource for information about this, and especially with regards to race and how it affects people of color and how it affects them disproportionately within the legal system is Michelle Alexander, and her book The New Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in finding out more about that, you can look her up online. She has a lot to say about this. This process that's happening and this thing that we're doing by creating a second class citizenship within the country with regard to people that have been incarcerated or charged with a crime. Mm-hmm. This is something that's important, something that you're passionate about, or something that you recognize and obviously needs to change, start having these conversations. This is what we need to do. How can we do this? There's plenty of ways to directly affect it. If you're an employer who supports people with, you know, for second chances, get in touch with these organizations like SCAFE. Get in touch with all the various reentry programs that are out there and let them know, hey, I'm an employer that's not going to discriminate. I take that checkbox off of my applications. You know, every place in the city, every place you go to find a job has a little checkbox that says, have you ever been incarcerated? Mm-hmm. I think the only place in the city that doesn't is probably college, which is great, which is school. Everybody should go back to school too. That's another opportunity. Right. That's another great, you know, resource to get people who need to further their education, to give them a little bit more skills to get back into it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you want to recognize this and to start supporting people and helping people to get back on their feet, because we all made mistakes, you know, start having these conversations with your neighbors, start having them with your employers, start having them with people you come into contact, organizations you work with. How are we discriminating against this class of people? You know, mm-hmm. The work I do at Q Center is very important to me because we're providing a service to people that works towards equality and justice, okay? And it's mm-hmm. not equality if it's not everyone's included, mm-hmm. you know? And it's the same with justice. I don't work for justice for just some people, okay? So, and these are the conversations that we need to start having with each other.
Mm-hmm. And I personally want to thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Natalie has been an incredible asset to Out Loud, and I know she's helped in many ways behind the scenes here at KBOO as well. And thankfully, to be a volunteer here at KBOO, your background and any possible prior convictions will not bar you from volunteering here at this awesome radio station. So, again, thank you for everything you've done, Natalie, both here at KBOO, at the Q Center. I know in your personal life you make a difference for a lot of people as well. So,
thank you. I just want to thank all the organizations and all the people that gave me the chance, that helped me to succeed, that wanted me to succeed, and gave me the opportunities and let me prove that I could be successful and change my life.
So. And your actions speak way louder than that piece of paperwork on that background check. So,
yes. And I have been fortunate. And if everybody had the same opportunities that I did, you'd see a lot more changes.
Right on. Okay. Hopefully you'll be continued to be given the opportunity to make those differences. And we'll be rooting with you, rooting for you on that appeal process. And hopefully we can share some good news with our listeners. And
we'll update you.
Yeah, I'm going to dream there'll be a welcome back Natalie party at the Q Center. Okay,
let's just
dream of that. Exactly.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, listeners, we're running out of time and we need to say our goodbyes, but I want to give Emmanuel a chance. Any closing thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, just one closing thought. This is what I always end with. We've all had a chance, or we all want the chance to right our wrongs. So in closing, everyone always remember, we're all in this together. If we all put one hand in the air, that means we're all in this together, and that if we have the chance to right our wrongs, I'm sure we would all do it, and second chances are for everyone.
Right on. Thank you. And again, Emmanuel's website is scafe.org.
Yes.
So keep up the good work. And
thank you so much.
Natalie, any closing thoughts for you?
Yeah, I just want to echo Emmanuel's statement. You know, we are all in this together. We've all made mistakes at one point or another. Whether or not you got caught, you know, is what makes the difference. But it's everyone, and it's all of us or none of us. So, you know, get out there and get involved.
Right on. Thank you both. Thank you for sharing your stories. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in this evening. My name's Carla. We really appreciate your listening, and we appreciate your support for KBOO. We'll be back next week. Until next time, stay proud and live out loud.
America's kill list. You've probably heard about it. Made in secret, no target off limits, including American citizens. Author and reporter Jeremy Scahill has been on the ground across the globe, uncovering the story of this change in U.S. policy. The award-winning author of Blackwater, Scahill is in town to talk about his remarkable new book, Dirty Wars. He'll join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, on Political Perspectives Wednesday morning, May 8th at 9 a.m. He'll talk about his decade of reporting on U.S. covert wars carried out by the CIA and the JSOC. Tune in and call in to join the conversation. That's reporter Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, on Political Perspectives, 9 a.m. Wednesday, May 8th, right here on KBOO.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to 90.7 FM KBOO Portland. So normally we would have a Hard Knock Radio coming up at this time, but KPFA is in the middle of their own pledge drive, which we just finished up here for ourselves. And we are going to have a special episode of The Cutting Edge instead of Hard Knock. The Cutting Edge is a show produced out of New York City, WBAI, that's 99.5 FM over there. And this particular episode is excerpts from a forum presented by the Baruch History Department at their Performing Arts Center in New York. This event is called Framed, Captured, and Gagged: State Repression of Black Radicals in the 1960s. So here we have The Cutting Edge.
Good morning, and welcome to The Cutting Edge, where journalism, culture, politics, and activism converge. I'm Dred Scott Key.
Good old days were full of sunshine. Now they're full of rain. The sun feels so right and warm every time he touched her. Now his arms feel so cold and wrong, but he's her baby's father. What can you do about love? Hey. Sunshine and rain, tears and laughter.
In this first of a two-part series, The Cutting Edge presents excerpts from a forum presented by the Baruch History Department at their Performing Arts Center in New York. The event, Framed, Captured, and Gagged: State Repression of Black Radicals in the 1960s, was hosted by Johanna Fernandez, Assistant Professor of 20th Century U.S. History, History of Social Movements, the Political Economy of American Cities, and African American History. The panelists included Daruba Benoit-Hard, former Black Panther released from prison after 19 years following the 1990 publication and discovery of counterintelligence program documents pointing to his innocence and frame-up by the FBI. Erica Huggins, former Black Panther and political prisoner, imprisoned with Bobby Seale for 2 years in the 1960s and director of the renowned Oakland Community School from 1973 to 1981. Dr. Ekinyele Umoja, professor at Georgia State University and author of A